Got science, we got maths, understand.
Everything in this world is made up of matter.
Hello, it's 6 p.m. and this is iScience Radio. That was our jingle, which is a chunk of Got Science by Gecko. You should check him out. Hello, I'm Polly and welcome to the show. It's Monday the 16th of November 2020, in case you hadn't realised. This show is run by science communication students from Imperial College London. We chat about all things science with a different theme each week. This week we're delving into the science of languages with lots of special guests. But first, let's hear the science news for this week. Keegan, over to you.
Hello, hello. Hope you're all having a wonderful Monday evening. And I wanted to talk today about the new coronavirus vaccines that are being released. One of them was released today, the other one last week. And I know you're probably sick to death of corona, but there's a bit more news we had than just the existence of the vaccine, and that's kind of how they work. So today it was announced that Moderna company COVID-19 vaccine is showing 95% protection, and then obviously last week we had Pfizer and BioNTech with their 90% protection. And these two vaccines are both using a very new technology that's never really been done before. It's not a traditional vaccine. And the fact that they're both being effective is pretty exciting. So I just thought I'd outline sort of how they work. So in a traditional vaccine, what scientists would do is they'd take the virus, so in this case COVID, and they'd isolate a single protein of interest from the virus. So they'd take a protein, in this case the spine protein around the edge, and they'd purify that so that it was only that, and they'd use that in their vaccine. And then when that protein gets injected into the body's like, oh, this is a new thing. And then it makes antibodies for it. And that's where your immune response comes from. The difference with these new ones is that they don't actually inject a protein. They inject mRNA. So mRNA is the molecule that's used to create proteins within cells. So when a virus infects a cell, what it's doing is injecting its mRNA. And then it causes our own cells to make more viruses. So they haven't taken the whole mRNA length from the virus, because otherwise it would make a virus, which is not what you want. But they have taken the mRNA that is used to create the spike protein all around the outside of the virus. So they inject the mRNA into our cells, and then our cells make the protein instead of the scientists making a protein in a lab and using that. So there's a few advantages to this. The first one, well, apparently it's very effective, so that's pretty good. Second one, it more closely mimics a viral infection, right? Injecting proteins into the body is just like, you know, it's not very representative of how a viral infection would work. Whereas injecting mRNA into the body is more similar to how a virus actually operates. You know, it actually uses the machinery of your own cells, albeit in a non-infectious way in the vaccine. And then the other advantage is, because it's mRNA, you can make mRNA really fast and really cheaply in a lab using PCR machines. It's much harder to isolate proteins and create proteins to use in the vaccine. So in theory, it's going to be a lot cheaper and a lot more scalable, which is exactly what we need right now. We've just got to wait back for the safety information. So anyway, there's just a little bit about how the different vaccines work. It's called an RNA vaccine. It's pretty cool, I think, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks so much, Keegan. And yeah, I think it's pretty cool too. I think we're all holding out for a vaccine that works, so fingers crossed we'll have some more news on this in the next few weeks and months. Now for our first song of the week. So we've chosen songs this week to reflect our multi-language theme, and I'd just like to paint a picture for you. I'm here in the studio alone, but through the glass behind the desk I've got Lily the producer, Laura and Cecilia over in the corner as well. So it's nice to have some smiling faces behind the masks. But our first song of the week, please forgive my pronunciation through all of these songs, it's Tout le même by Stromae.
Tout le même. sam se tu s nimem. Macho Mechi, bon de Novi est infidèle. Si prévisible, non je ne suis pas certaine. Que tu le mérites, avec de la chance qu'on vous aime. Dis-moi merci. Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous au prochain règlement. Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous sûrement au prochain rêve. Cette fois c'était la dernière. Tu peux croire que c'est qu'une crise. Mat une dernière fois mon derrière. Il est à côté de mes valises. Tu diras au revoir à ta mère. Elle qui t'idéalise. Tu ne vois même pas tout ce que tu perds. Avec une autre ce serait pire. Quoi toi aussi tu veux finir maintenant. C'est le monde à l'envers. Moi je le disais pour te faire réagir seulement. Toi t'y pensais. Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous au prochain règlement. Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous sûrement au prochain rêve. Facile à dire, je suis gnangnan. Et que j'aime trop les blablabla. Mais non, 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 c'est important. Ce que t'appelles les ragnagna. Tu sais, la vie, c'est des enfants. Et comme toujours, c'est pas le bon moment. Ah oui, pour les faire, là, tu es présent. Et pour les élever, y'aura des absents. Lorsque je ne serai plus belle. Ou du moins au naturel. Arrête, je sais que tu mens. Il n'y a que Kate Moss qui est éternelle. Moche ou belle,
c'est jamais bon.
Bête ou belle,
c'est jamais bon.
Belle ou moi,
c'est jamais bon.
Moi ou elle,
c'est jamais bon.
Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous au prochain règlement. Rendez-vous, rendez-vous, rendez-vous sûrement au prochain rêve.
That was Tout le même by Stromae, or as inaccurately translated by a group of friends of mine, All the Memes. Hello to our listeners! I think we've got 10 of you on the stream. Yes, very exciting. There's been praise for Keegan's news from Jay. Thank you very much for that. And Isabel is exclaiming Stromae, which I hope it's an exclamation of joy and not of disgust. Do make that clear for us, Isabel. If you have any comments you'd like to share, then please feel free to post a comment on the YouTube live stream. So, as I mentioned, this week we're talking about all things languages and the science behind it all. Earlier this week, producer Lily and I met with Celeste. Based in South Africa, Celeste's scientific background is in biology and specifically botany. Celeste was due to join us on the Science Communication Masters this year, but had to defer due to COVID, sadly. So it was lovely to include her in the show this week. Celeste gave us an insight into her experiences learning different languages. Here's the first part of our chat. Celeste, thank you for joining me today.
Such a pleasure. I'm very excited to be people from the course.
Could you tell me about your languages that you know and where you're calling us from?
I am South African. I'm calling at the moment from Cape Town in South Africa. My first language is Afrikaans. I was born and raised in Afrikaans, and I attended primary school and high school and my first year of university in Afrikaans as well. But South Africa having English as its sort of main language, I grew up with English as a second language from very young. So I started learning English when I was 4 at home, and I was immersed like in an English preschool. And I started learning English formally when I was 11 at school. And now I'm trying to learn French. And it's a very, very different language to anything, very different experience to anything that I've ever had. So it's interesting to contrast how I process the different languages and how different it is to learning a language as an adult versus when you're still a kid.
That sounds very interesting. And just going back to kind of growing up in South Africa, you said about learning English kind of in preschool and at home. So was English kind of spoken at home? What kind of languages did you watch on TV? Did you find it was quite easy just to kind of assimilate that? And how much do you think that was being immersed in English? And how much do you think it was actually having to sit down and learn?
I think Afrikaans being one of the rarer languages, well, not really rare, just there's not a lot of people in the world that speaks it. All of the movies, all of the like children's books, or most of the children's books I grew up with were in English. And when I started learning English, and this is a very vivid memory, my parents had English hour. So at home every single night, we would have an hour where we only speak English to each other. And that was when I was 4 years old. Yeah, so growing up, I do feel that my exposure to English was probably a lot more than other mainstream languages, such as French or German.
And when you now look at your abilities in Afrikaans and in English, do you think you're better or worse at speaking one or writing one, or is there not really a difference for you?
Up until second year of university, I still had to sort of translate live in my head from Afrikaans to English. And even now, if I spend a very, very long time in Afrikaans company and I don't speak English often, then I kind of slip up more often. But recently, like especially at university, I do consider myself completely bilingual. In certain areas, I feel like my English is actually better than my Afrikaans, and I do think in English, and all of my to-do lists are in English, and it comes naturally now.
I think that's so interesting. When I was 7, I moved to Spain from England, so a bit older than 4, but then again was pretty much immersed in Spanish, so quite quickly picked up being able to speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. But I totally know what you mean about, you know, now I've lived in England again for about 8 years now, so I'm back to, because I've not been surrounded by it, the live translating thing I can totally get. And it's weird explaining to people that sometimes you just get it and you don't have to actively think of the process. And then other times you are consciously thinking, what am I saying kind of thing, or what am I hearing? And I don't know about you, but I definitely find it easier when I'm drunk.
Yes, one friend, she's trying to learn Afrikaans now. She's English speaking. And last year, on the very last day of our fieldwork, we drank an entire bottle of warm champagne, and she started, and I told her my English is declining, like I can't speak English properly anymore. And she's like, no, don't worry, I'll speak Afrikaans to you. And her Afrikaans was perfect, and I'm like, what's happening? It's suddenly like spot on, and she's never spoken in Afrikaans like that before. So yeah.
Thank you for that, Celeste. We had a lovely comment from Naomi during that, saying that it's great to hear from her, even though we haven't had the chance to meet Celeste in person. So I agree. It was really lovely having a chat with Celeste. And our chat reminded me of this amazing wine tour I went on an open-top bus when I was in Cape Town for a conference. So that brought back some happy memories. But I did fall asleep on the bus and got sunburnt. So I don't know how good I was at distinguishing the different wines. But anyway, just some insights into my life outside the studio for you all. So has anyone had similar experiences to Celeste? Let me know in the YouTube comments. But before we hear the rest of my discussion with her, it's time for another song. This is Celeste's choice. Now, excuse the pronunciation. It's called Die Tal van My Heart by Stef Bros. And it's sung in Dutch and Afrikaans. And the title means The Language of My Heart, which is very apt for the show today.
Kijk, de zon staat aan de hemel. Dit is het einde van de nacht. Ik was verdwaald in het donker. Vond mijn weg terug op de tast. Vroeger was ik rijk aan woorden. Ik ben verstild, ik ben veranderd. Maar mijn stem blijft branden. Dit is het vuur, jij mag je warmen. Soms gebroken, gebroken en verward. Dit is de taal van mijn hart.
Ik eet mijn spiegelbeeld zien val. Ik leer aan scherven grond. Ik eet mijzelf leer ken. Als helden en als een hond. Maar daar is nou zo mijn oor. Van al mijn woede en geweld. Want ik ken ook mijn donkere kant. Ik heb vrede met mezelf. Want ik zing die taal van mijn hart. Hoor die taal van mijn hart. En al klink ik soms gebroken. Gebroken en verward. Dit is die taal van mijn hart.
Ik ben te nemen of te laat. Je mag van mij houden.
Je mag mij ook haat. Ik is wat ik is. Dit is mijn wereld. Dit is mijn stem. Dit is die taal
van mijn hart.
Dit is die taal
van mijn hart.
What a romantic song. We had the torches out here, some swaying going on, I could see through the glass for everyone behind the mixing desk. Don't worry, Gareth, though, no live flames in case you're listening. So that was Die Tal van My Heart by Stef Bros. And we had some interesting discussion going on in the YouTube chat during that. So apparently Isabel revealed that Stromae apparently uses a lot of wordplay, which I also don't know that because I don't understand what he's singing. I just like his beats, but great to know. And Naomi's recommending a song called Just Be Lekker, which is in English, but Lekker is a South African word. So there we go. There's a lot going on in the chat. You should join. And I've also, you know, exclusively got a linguistics, I want to say, expert listening too. So hopefully we don't say anything incorrect, but I'm sure Farah will be able to give us some interesting feedback on what we're talking about. Anyway, so did you know that some people can taste words? Did you know that out there? Did you know that? Nope, we've got some shaking heads over in the studio. Well, we're headed over now to the second half of my chat with Celeste to tell us more about this.
Celeste, you were telling me before that you have synesthesia, which is very interesting. I know synesthesia takes lots of different forms. So I was just wondering, could you tell us a bit more about what you experience? And for people who don't know what it is, describe it a little bit and how you found that speaking different languages.
Synesthesia is basically, I think the root of the word comes from just overlapping of the senses. So the best way I can describe it is when two of your senses that won't normally interact actually overlap at the same time and you can't distinguish those two from each other. The most common type is, I think it's called grapheme color synesthesia, which is the one I have. And it's basically where you associate different letters or numbers or symbols with a specific color and that color doesn't change. So basically, if I'm reading something in a book and the letters are in black and white, I see everything in color. It's like reading a rainbow, but it's not like I see it physically in front of myself. It's like, it's just the color is associated with the word. The word is still in black and white, but my brain just associates different colors with it. Yeah, sometimes also character and shape gets associated with words. And you also get different types, such as the one friend that I just talked about that's trying to speak Afrikaans, she can actually taste sound, which is pretty weird. But I think she said that high notes are like sour in her mouth. So that's also a very rare, a much, much rarer form. But I think up to 25% of the population has some sort of synesthesia. But I remember very distinctly that my first grade teacher, who specialized in children with dyslexia, said that I see words like a dyslexic person. In other words, I see it in three dimensions, but she doesn't think that I am dyslexic because I can still spell words perfectly fine and reading and writing is not a problem for me. So yeah, that probably must have been a huge hint that I was a synesthete. So in regards to the different languages, since I'm now learning French, I've realized that different languages have different color palettes almost. And I think it has to do with which letters are used the most. Like in Afrikaans, you have a lot of vowels and you have a lot of hard R's and hard G's. So all of those things have darker colors, color palette. And French is more, has a lot of C's and Q's and F's, and that's more like a pastel colored palette. And English is very vibrant, like you've got a lot of E's, which is red, and I's, which is yellow. So it's very interesting how the different languages sort of have different color palettes.
I have to ask, do names for you have colours? So when you look at your own name, does it have a colour? Does Polly have a colour and Lily?
So generally names and common words take takes the colour of the first letter. And some letters have dominant colours like E or I, like it would overtake the colour of the whole word. My name, Celeste, is pink because C is pink. Polly is red because P is red. And Lily is yellow because it has L, I and Y, which are all yellow. So, yeah. And I always, associate exactly the same color. So you'll often find with different synesthetes that have the same synesthesia, they have certain letters that overlap in color. So I would say E is red, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, my E is also red. I also think that synesthesia, you're not necessarily born with the color associations. This is my take on it. I don't know if it's anything scientific, but I think that it has to do with your experiences, your associations as a really small child. So if you think of, you know, those big posters that they put up in children's playrooms or nurseries, you'd see like this huge one that's a big yellow one, and two, which is a baby blue, two, and three, which is a baby pink, three. And that's like the colors of, in my mind. And I think, yeah, the colors that you associate with it is ingrained within you from a very young age.
Thank you for sharing your experiences with us, Celeste.
Thank you for having me. And I'm really glad that I could share a bit about synesthesia, because it's not everybody knows about it. And I hope some people that listen to this find out that they actually have synesthesia and they didn't know.
Cool. Thank you so much, Celeste. So it's getting busy now in the YouTube chat. Thanks for everyone's interactions. Our resident linguistics graduate has just emphasized how English is such a minefield to learn and how anyone learning English is so impressive. So there you go, Celeste. One of the things that Farah has mentioned is that one of her favourite things in phonetics is about vowel sounds, and the word envelope has three E's in it, but they're all pronounced differently. I never thought about that before. I think synesthesia is so cool. And Keegan is wondering whether synesthesia helps memorising things easier. If there's any people with synesthesia listening, let us know if it does make it easier for you or harder. And Naomi, who studied physics and music, says that some musicians with perfect pitch associate different colours with chords or pitches. How wild! Well, there you go. What's interesting is that there's more and more research suggesting that synesthesia is actually very common in people who have autism. And I think that kind of shows the overlap between the different ways of sensory processing. And there's an article in some of the Nature research papers that we'll link to below if you're interested in reading more about that. So anyone listening think they might have synesthesia? Sophie says, I wonder if it ever gets distracting. I don't know, but maybe Celeste will let us know. Okay, it's time for another song now. This is Laura's Choice, who's sitting right up there giving me thumbs up. She'll be joining us later on in the show. It's Por la boca vive el pez by Fito y Fitipaldis, which is Spanish for The Fish Lives Through Its Mouth. Interpret that as you will.
Algo lo que me invade, todo viene de dentro. Nunca lo que me sacie, siempre quiero lo hambriento. Todo me queda grande para no estar contigo. Sabes, quisiera darte siempre un poco más de lo que te pido. Sabes que soñaré si no estás, que me despierto. Sabes que quiero más, no sé vivir solo con cinco sentidos. Este mar cada vez guarda más barcos hundidos. Tú eres aire, yo papel, donde vayas yo me iré. Si me quedo oscuras, luz de la locura, ven. Dijo alguna vez, por la boca vive el pez, y yo lo estoy diciendo, te lo estoy.
¿por qué preguntas? ¿Cuánto te he echado de menos? Si en cada canción que escribo, corazón, eres tú el acento. No quiero estrella errante, no quiero ver la aurora. Soñaré si no estás, que me despierto contigo. Sabes que quiero más, no sé vivir solo con cinco sentidos. Este mar cada vez guarda más barcos. No estás conmigo siempre que te canto. Yo hago canciones para estar contigo, porque escribo igual que sangro, porque sangro todo lo que escribo. Me he dado cuenta cada vez que canto, que si no canto no sé lo que digo. Y apenas está bailando con el llanto, y cuando quiera bailará conmigo. La vida eterna solo dura un rato, y es lo que tengo para estar contigo.
Was Por la boca vive el pez by Fito y Fitipaldis. I hope you're enjoying our vast array of music in different languages today. I certainly am. And of course, the language of a good saxophone solo is universal. Yes, lots of nodding from outside. If you've just joined us today, the show theme is languages. We've heard so far about bilinguality and synesthesia from our guest Celeste. And there's been a few questions in the YouTube stream that Celeste has now sent me answers to. So, in case you were wondering, synesthesia does help with learning, but sometimes it hinders her from remembering stuff correctly. Like in the periodic table, if the colour of the element and the symbol of that element are different colours, so it's annoying. But it's not distracting to her because she was born with it. And she told me in the interview actually that she was diagnosed with it at 16, so she lived with it for a long time thinking everybody else saw the world like that. And she said she also has sound motion synesthesia, where she associates a sound with movement, and that can get distracting. So there's so much to delve into there, which we'll have to come back to when we do more on languages next term. Anyway, moving on to our next interviewee, Lily and I met with Liang earlier in the week, who is a biology and English graduate from Bonn. Liang spoke to Lily all about her experiences of different languages. So over to Liang and Lily now.
Liang?
Oh, we're having some technical difficulties. As Lily said earlier, and we have to give Lily a lot of credit, producer Lily, because she's been excellent. But she said to me earlier when we were struggling to get something to work that her degree was in archaeology, so it was only sticks and stones. So we can't expect her to run a whole radio studio, which is fair enough. In the meantime, Celeste has just messaged me a little bit more about this movement synesthesia. which she said can get distracting. So she said, for example, the loading icon on a desktop makes a sound, and sometimes she can't look at it because it makes a swishing sound. So it sounds like there's a lot going on there in terms of different sensory processing. And I definitely found it interesting how she mentioned her teacher, who was a specialist in dyslexia, picking up on the different ways she interpreted sound. That's definitely something that later in the year or next term, when we're hoping to do a series on languages, so hopefully a few minutes every week where we talk about languages, we can think about dyslexia, because I know we've got someone on the course who's very keen to talk about that as well. So we're ready now to go over to our interview with Liang and Lily. Take it away.
Hello, Lily.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Just getting used to being back in Germany.
So you were raised in Germany. Is it your first language or your second?
I never know how to answer that because, well, my first language originally was Chinese, and I was also born in China, and I kind of grew up there too until I was 7, and then I moved to Germany, and that is when I learned German. So actually German is officially, I'd say, my second language, but now I consider it my mother tongue because I speak it better than Chinese.
Obviously we are talking in English together.
That so would be my third language, I guess.
That is impressive. When did you start learning English?
I think I started learning English when I was around 10, and I also went abroad to Ireland where I learned a bit more. I always feel like you can learn more of a language when you're there, you live there and work there. And I also learned French in school. To practice that, I went to France as an au pair. So that's my fourth one.
Four languages is a solid number to have. I think the immersive experience is such a key part to learning a language. If you have no one to practice with, then you have no reason to speak the language and it just fades.
Definitely. I just remember when I was studying French in school, I knew the grammar. I could write essays about it, but I was just not able to speak it fluently. Then I went to France and the mother was going crazy with me because I didn't understand what she was saying. I couldn't express myself. I think it just took me 2 months to really get fluent because you're kind of in the surrounding and you're forced to speak French to somehow survive and get around. So yeah, I think that's the best way to learn a language, really.
I agree. I learned Spanish after I dated an Italian. I learned Spanish to spite him. After we broke up, I was like, fuck this.
So you do speak a couple of languages yourself.
Yeah. And then I learned Spanish through textbooks, like grammatical books, Duolingo, obviously. And then I was an au pair in Spain. And I think it took me the same amount of time. I think 2 months is when it like clicked.
Yeah, I think 2 months is kind of a point where you feel a bit more confident about the language and know some casual vocab as well. So yeah. you don't just speak the formal language that is on paper, but you can actually try to be a normal person and have normal conversations.
That's definitely something I struggle with in Japanese, is the formality, because either I speak way too formal or I speak way too casually that could be seen as offensive.
That's my problem with Chinese too, because obviously I stopped learning Chinese when I was 7, when I moved to Germany. So my Chinese is really fluent. I don't have an accent, but I kind of speak like a 7-year-old. So when I started working at the museum and they asked me to give guided tours in Chinese, I really had to sit down with my mom just to try and figure out how to speak formally, how to speak to adults and not to my mom, because she was the only person I spoke Chinese to.
There is such a difference between the language you speak at home with your family in a familiar setting and then going into the workplace in that language.
Yeah, it is completely different.
Do you remember what it was like to learn German as a child?
Yes, I can. It was actually quite natural, I would say, because I started at first class in Germany after I already started school in China. So I did my first year of primary school in China and then I just stopped it. And then I went to Germany, did it again. So I kind of grew up with the children around me who were also starting school, which was really helpful. When I came to Germany, it all just kind of happened. I didn't actively learn. I had a really nice teacher who really made an effort to teach me. So after our lessons, she would always go to the school kitchen with me and try to teach me some German. And she would show me a fork and say it's a fork and stuff like that. So that was really nice. And she did it completely for free. That helped a lot. And also my stepdad is German. So German is what we spoke back home. So I learned it, I think, within the first year, more or less. So I still had some grammatical issues, especially with the articles, which are really weird in German and absolutely not regular in any way. There's also no rules about it. You just have to learn them by heart. So after I met a few friends, started playing with them and meet up and talk and, yeah, you know, like childish talk, but it still helped. My German was on a native level after 3 years. But I think it's really also because I was so young. I wouldn't be able to do that now. In my English studies, they also told us that there are like cognitive processes which get lower after some time. So they actually said after year six, it's really hard to go and learn a language so that you can speak it as a native. I think it was around 3 years old where you can actually learn two languages as your mother tongue. But don't quote me, I'm really not sure.
I can't believe how many languages Liang speaks. How lovely was it of that teacher of hers to take that time to teach her all those words in German after school. It's so sweet. We'll come back to her after her song choice. So this is Je ne parle pas français, I hope that was okay, by Namika, which surprisingly Liang has assured me is in German, but I don't know how much I believe that, so here we go.
Verlaufen, hab keinen Plan, wohin ich geh. Steh mit meinem kleinen Koffer hier auf der Champs-Élysées. Auf einmal sprichst du mich an. Salut, qu'est-ce que vous cherchez? Ich sag pardon, es tut mir leid, ich kann dich leider nicht verstehen. Doch du redest immer weiter, ich find's irgendwie charmant. Um alle zwei Tassen Kaffee mit nem Stift auf deine Hand. Je ne parle pas français. Aber bitte red weiter, alles was du so erzählst, hört sich irgendwie nice an. Und die Zeit bleibt einfach stehen, ich wünschte ich könnte dich verstehen. Je ne parle pas français, aber bitte red weiter. Der Staub auf deiner Jeans hat es Brie, wenn du sprichst. Die Kippe schmeckt nach Liberté, solange wir beide sie uns teilen. Du erzählst in Körpersprache und ich hör zwischen deinen Zeilen. Ich häng an deinen Lippen, ich will hier nicht mehr vor. Und du redest und redest, doch ich versteh kein Wort. Je ne parle pas français, aber bitte red weiter. Alles, was du so erzählst, hört sich irgendwie nice an. Und die Zeit bleibt einfach stehen. Ich wünschte, ich könnte dich verstehen. Je ne parle pas français, aber bitte red weiter. Oh la 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 la. Oh la 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 la. Die Sonne fällt hinter die Häuser, Schiffe ziehen an uns vorbei. Und alles, was wir wollen, dass der Moment noch etwas bleibt. Um uns über tausend Menschen, sie reden aufeinander ein. Doch die Sprache, die wir sprechen, die verstehen nur wir zwei. Je ne parle pas français, aber bitte red weiter. Alles, was du so erzählst, hört sich irgendwie nice an. Und die Zeit bleibt einfach stehen. Ich wünschte, ich könnte dich verstehen.
That was Je ne parle pas français by Namika, Liang's choice for the show today. I really liked that one. I thought it was quite good. Sophie said that she could hear her most used phrase from when she lived in Germany in that song, which was tut mir leid. So that, I believe, means I'm sorry. So I'm not sure what that tells us about your time in Germany, Sophie. But I'm sorry that that was your most used phrase. Okay, we're going to go back to Liang now and hear the rest of her interview.
Finding doing a master's in your third language?
I think since my undergrad was already in English, mainly, at least the English part of it, I think it's not so much of a difference. And I think it's okay. But I just remember the first time when I went to Ireland. So that was the first time I was actually completely studying in English. In speaking, I don't feel that it's hard. But when it comes to writing, actually, for example, for writing the essays, I really need to have a dictionary. And I use DeepL, which is a really good translator.
When you're speaking English, are you translating or is it a natural, fairly natural process?
No, I'm not translating. English is fairly natural. In my first week or my first month even in France, I was actually translating. So I was really thinking about the German sentence and trying to put it into the French words. But I think in English, it's quite natural now.
So you were saying you don't think in a specific language though. So how would you describe that?
Yes, that's actually something that I found out around last year when I was talking to my friends and we were talking about in which language we actually think and how we think. And then I was really trying to keep an eye on how I think. And I realized I just don't think in words. I really just think in scenes. Sometimes, for example, when something falls down or something really stupid happens, then I may swear in my mind, but that is always the language I'm currently speaking. So if I'm speaking French mostly at that time, then it's French. That's why I think it's quite easy for me sometimes to switch between Chinese and German, because I don't have to switch in my mind because I see the same scenes. I just use another language.
I mean, I know I think in my head, like in a language, and I deliver TED Talks, therefore I'm like, I'm having to do a language. But I do the idea of you're playing out a scene. And for me, it's also the feelings and the sensations rather than the actual language. That's like,
yes, that's it.
You mentioned kind of switching between languages, like there is a switch, because like in my experience, some words in Japanese and Spanish are just weirdly similar. In Japanese, to say, you know, something but this, you would say demo, and in Spanish it's pero. And because they both are or soundings, if I'm speaking one and then that but pero demo happens, I'll just switch.
That is interesting.
And it's like you're on a train track and someone's just pulled a lever and I'm going in a different path now.
Oh, I just remember when I was in France, I went to Malta, like directly to work there. So I had to switch from French to English. And there, I think I remember something happening like this also, because in French, you have this est-ce, which is just a kind of starting a question. Sometimes when I was trying to ask a question in English, then I just started with est-ce, and then I couldn't switch back to English anymore. So there's a lot of partying going on.
Yeah.
And every time I reached a limit where I would say, okay, I'm really happy right now, enjoying, and I've had a couple of beers. At some point, I started talking French and no one could understand me anymore. And that was really an issue because I couldn't get home. It took me some time to realize that I'm speaking the wrong language, because English and French are both foreign languages to me. So it's much harder to switch between them.
Well, that's interesting. Do you have any tips for learning languages, do you think? At least maybe more like lockdown tips.
Oh, lockdown tips. I think there are also some remote tandem possibilities. So I think it really helps to speak to natives regularly. So that's the same thing I experienced when I was studying French. I knew the grammar from school, but I couldn't speak. And once I just came to that French family and French was just the language to speak, I just learned it naturally. And it's much easier and it's much more fun.
What is your favorite language and what other ones are you hoping to learn, if any?
I know that I want to learn Spanish one day. I think it's quite easy to learn because it's very close to French. What's my favorite language? That's really hard to say. I think the best sounding language is actually English because it's kind of smooth, and German is just tak 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 tak, and Chinese is even more like that. I think German is a really nice language for writing because you have many possibilities to make your text really beautiful and play with the language.
That's interesting.
There's much more variety in some way. At least that's what I feel. Well, we have some really famous poets from Germany in the past, and maybe that's where it came from. Have a look on Heinrich Heine, romantic poems.
Thank you very much for joining us today and chatting about your amazing bilingual brain. Not even bilingual, you're like multilingual, quadrilingual.
I never know how to call that. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Lily and Liang. I've never heard of English being a preferred language to listen to. I thought normally people would say French or something that's more kind of musical, but there you go. And don't you think it's so interesting the way we think and picture the world? It's like that conundrum of how you perceive time. Do you see it time moving towards you, or you moving forwards through time? Something I think we should explore in another episode, maybe. Now, oh yes, Lily's nodding. Now, I hope you're getting excited for our studio takeover happening very soon. Oh, if I could do sound effects right here, I would do a drum roll. But in the meantime, I don't have time to tell you all about it now. But as well as being incredibly useful in different countries and contexts, there are actually scientific studies that prove that learning languages makes your brain bigger, so it physically grows an area of your brain called the hippocampus, and it also makes it easier to learn. So those are some interesting facts for you if you need more motivation to learn a language. I'm thinking of you, Sophie. Anyway, after this song, I'll be booted out of the studio to hand over to Cecilia and Laura, who are two of my colleagues, and they are super keen on all things languages. Now for a song to give me time to get out of the studio and for the others to get in, whilst we all maintain a 2 meter distance at all time without so much of a breath passing between us. Okay, this is Cecilia's choice. It's Via con me by Paolo Conte.
Via, via, vieni via di qui. Niente più ti lega a questi luoghi, neanche questi fiori azzurri. Via, via, neanche questo tempo grigio, pieno di musiche e di uomini che ti sono piaciuti. It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck, my baby, it's wonderful. It's wonderful, it's wonderful. I dream of you. Chips, chips. Do 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 do. Chiboom, chiboom. Do 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 do. Chiboom, chiboom, boom. Do 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 do. Via, via. Vieni via con me. Entra in questo amore buio. Non perderti per niente al mondo. Via, via. Non perderti per niente al mondo. Lo spettacolo d'arte varia di uno innamorato di te. It's wonderful, that's wonderful, that's wonderful. Good luck, my baby, that's wonderful, that's wonderful. It's wonderful, I dream of you. Chips, chips. Do-do-do-do-do, chibu, chibu, bo. Do-do-do-do-do. Amore buio, pieno di uomini. Via, entra e fatti un bagno caldo. C'è un accappatoio azzurro, fuori piove un mondo freddo.
That's wonderful, that's wonderful, that's wonderful. Good luck, my baby, that's wonderful. It's wonderful, that's wonderful. I dream of you. Chips, chips, chips. Do 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 do, chi boom, chi boom, boom. Do 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 do, chi boom, chi boom, boom. Do 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 do.
Hello. Well, I'm here with Cecilia, and I gotta say it's so like weird to speak in English with you because like we normally speak in Italian.
Yeah. Hi. Hello, everyone listening. Yes, that's true. You're very right. Although I guess that people that know us might find odd that we speak Italian between us because mm-hmm. I mean I'm Italian, so that makes total sense. But you are not Italian. You are Spanish. Yeah. So I think maybe to begin our conversation today, you can tell us where did you learn Italian?
Well, I did an Erasmus in Brussels and then another one in Montpellier.
Of course, I mean, learning Italian in Montpellier and Brussels, yeah, that makes sense, total right? sense. I mean, just remind us, is Montpellier north or south of Rome? Yeah. Yeah, just kidding, of course, but I find it peculiar that you have learned Italian while living in France. And I mean, your Italian is really good. I can judge it.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm curious now, how did you learn it? How did it go?
Well, actually, yeah, I was surrounded by Italians in both experiences in Brussels and Montpellier. So that's why I started learning it. Actually, Italian is really close to Spanish. So at the beginning, I could just like understand. And in the end, I ended up like speaking it. But yeah.
I see. So what you are saying is that you never study Italian, like you never like sit in a class with a teacher, books, all this kind of things.
Yeah, actually, I took like a small course just to like make sure that I had the B2 level, but that was all. And actually, I learned it all the time in social context. So as I was saying, I was always surrounded by friends like that were Italian. And so it was kind of a game for me. I was just like all the time asking like, oh, how can I say this? Or did I say it right? And all the time, like they were correcting me. And it was really fun because for me, it was just like just mm-hmm. going up and up in different like levels of Italian. And in the end, I found myself really speaking it like quite fluently.
Yeah, you do.
And yeah, like I think it's really like cool to see the difference between learning a language in a social context and learning it in school. Because in school, you involve like this language and memory systems in your brain. But when you learn it in the street, let's say, you'll involve these two systems. But at the same time, you also involve like the emotional systems. And this helps retain words in a much easier way. Another interesting thing is that like when you associate words with gestures, like when you use your body while you speak at this new language, this also helps you to retain words. And I think that the fact that Italian has so many hand gestures.
Yeah, we do. I mean, you basically speak another language. You just, you can put the Italian gestural language on your CV
yeah.
for sure.
I hope so. Well, and yeah, what's your story? Like, tell me like what languages do you speak?
Yeah. So as I said before, Italian is my mother tongue. Mm-hmm. I speak English as you can hear. And also I'm bisschen Deutsch, like a little bit of German that I've learned while I was doing my PhD studies in Germany.
Okay. So then like this German that you've learned, like did you learn like so much? Like what, like your level must be so good.
Yeah, well, good is not exactly how we describe my German, but I see different reasons why I didn't pick up the language as much as I wanted. Mm-hmm. And with reason here, I mean, like, basically excuses that I tell myself. But yeah, let's move on. One thing is that what you refer just now is that what you just mentioned now is that, I mean, there is no real German body language. So this for sure did not help. Mm. But joke aside, reason is that the German words sounds very different from Italian ones. Like what Liang mentioned, for example, this tak 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 sounds. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason is that Germans use many more consonants in their words than vowels. And I always beg them, like, yeah, just use vowels. Are for free, you know? Like, so at the end, the sound of words is so far from my mother tongue that it's very difficult for me to just absorb words simply like listening to people speaking the language. And This is, I think, is something to do with the way like adults learn a new language, which is normally happening in like in relation to the lexical space, in your brain, where your mother tongue is like settled, and so when of course the words that you're learning are orthographically similar to your mother tongue words. Yeah. That makes the process of learning languages way more easier for your brain. And I think this is probably what happened
exactly
for you while learning Italian. And and the other reason is that although I was living in Germany, basically I was not surrounded by German language because all my friends and co-workers were very international. So we spoke basically English among us. So this definitely did not help us, yeah. did not help me to learn German. Very efficiently.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. Like Italian and French are like closer to like Spanish. Like, yeah, sorry, I didn't say that. Like, I also speak French because actually when I was in Brussels and Montpellier, I was surrounded by co-workers that spoke French. And so I just wanted to learn more French. I had done like 2 years before going to Brussels of academic French, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then I just liked learn it just while I was working there. And yeah, the fact that they are Latin languages really like helped in this sense. And I don't think that like if it had been German, it would. I mean, I don't think it had been as easier for me. And I don't. I mean, I think I would feel in the same situation.
I mean, actually, I did study German, and I learned a bit of it. It's not that bad, but never up to the level where I could think in German, which is I think is what has to click in order for you to master a language. And that is also why I think I was never feeling like a sense of belonging with the German language. Because the fascinating thing about human language is its ability to unify us as a species and at the same time also to separate us into different cultures. And for example, do you know there are like about 7,000 languages spoken around the world?
Oh, wow.
It's crazy,
isn't
it? That's
insane.
Yeah, so it means there are so many cultures. And because languages are so interconnected with culture, identity, sense of belonging, not belonging, that's why I think was making more difficult for me to learn German. And I experienced that whenever I like move out of Germany for like traveling and I enter another country where I was speaking the language, I immediately felt this sense of belonging. So it's something similar happened to you?
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to say. Like, Italian, since it's so close to Spanish, it also felt kind of like home. And at the same time, our cultures are so similar that I also felt like this sense of like, oh, I feel like as if I was surrounded by Spanish people, and like more or less. I mean, yeah, the language really played a part in this sense. But at the same time, don't you feel that like you place languages in different contexts? That is like, for instance, for me, Catalan is like very educational because I've done all my education with like in Catalan. Then Spanish is more like emotional or personal. But then like English at the beginning was like more social, and now it's turning into academic, of course, because we're here studying. And Italian, it's definitely social. And French is more like work-like. So do you
think? Yeah, absolutely. It was the same for me. So while I was living in Italy, I was using English just for my studies. So the English-speaking version of me was a very rational and emotionless one. But when I started using English in my daily life to express like my emotions and thoughts, then immediately I noticed a difference. So now actually I feel more like emotionally exposed when I speak English, because English language uses this personal pronouns so much more than Italian language does. Mm-hmm. So you always put your you put yourself into what you are saying. And at the same time also, languages help you to like change the way you perceive yourself. But at the same time, I think they also craft reality too. For example, we could try like an easy game here. Could you tell me what kind of adjective would you associate with the word bridge, for example?
With the word bridge, I guess like a strong bridge or big bridge.
Yeah, interesting. I would say exactly the same.
Yeah.
But there was a study that showed that like German speakers would rather use words adjective like elegant. So adjective more associated to like a feminine context. Mm. And this is because in German, bridge is feminine, like in Italian and Spanish is masculine. So it really shows how much a language can change the way you see the world around you.
Definitely. I think like we like touched on many things in this like conversation, but I think that we missed like the fact that like, well, I'm bilingual, but I think we could like talk about this in next term when we do like
a series. There is so much to say about languages. Yeah. It's really a fascinating word. And the time is running out. I see Polly standing there. Out of the word. So the
door.
I think we need to go. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, bye everyone.
Thank you so much, Cecilia and Laura. They did a fantastic job of a whiz through so many different aspects of languages. And as I said earlier, that is just a tiny snippet of languages and a tiny bit about science as well. But next term, we'll be running a regular feature with loads more to talk about. So next week, we'll be here, same time, same place. And Lily and I will be talking about the one part of science where our interests intersect. So we're going to be talking about gender-based violence in the past and in the future. Maybe a less cheery topic, but hopefully interesting none the same. Hope to see you there. See you next week.
Got science, we got maths, you're staying up to class.
Everything in this world is made up of matter.